Welcome to Lulu Island. Where I'm like lifting my skirt over my head so that it's not so breezy. But I gotta do this intro bit because I said I would in the description, and of course I can't just edit it. Anyway, I'm on Binti Hill with Zoe. It's gotten suddenly very breezy, and so I've lifted my skirt over the phone and over my head so I can do this intro. The recording that's coming next I did in bed this morning, hoping my neighbor wouldn't hear, and then I didn't say hello Lulu Island because I don't want anyone that I live around to know my podcast, because I want to keep my privacy. Okay,
1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 9 10 11 12. You know where you are. Hi. So I know that there are ears at the end of my voice, at the end of this phone, because I see numbers and I guess I believe them. And I see I have 19 Spotify users or something like that. I mean, my numbers are really low. That's okay. I think there was a time where I was really like, I want numbers, I want to, you know, like, there were things that I thought I wanted to achieve. And it's funny, like, hearing people talk about it now, like, you know, like everyone can be Joe Rogan and, yeah, it's you know, it's a thing. So up front, I don't know, do I say the things that I think might bother you? Like, say you have some understanding, probably still gonna bother you anyway. I mean, I'm living in an apartment. Oh, by the way, killer episode, I think, on the ethical slut. And for those of you who know me and don't want to hear, or just don't want to hear about sex stuff, this latest episode about I think it's Oh My God Friday on the ethical slut. It's all about this crazy experience I had going to hospital on Good Friday. So it's now Easter Sunday here in Australia. It's like getting close to 7 a.m., which is the official time you're allowed to make noise outside. I mean, it's more nuanced than that, but anyway. So there is also a social expectation around all of that as well. People feel pretty entitled to not have any noise disrupt them before 7 a.m. I think that's the vibe I get. So there's some air conditioning noise in the background because I'm cloistered here. My nose is sniffly because I was having a little pity party. Yes, related to going to hospital. I just wanted to slow down in this episode about one particular aspect of the hospital experience, where I came very close to being misdiagnosed as having, you know, presenting with, you know, difficult behavior due to an infection, which I had. Like, I had all my medication with me. I'd passed, like, these two types of strong antibiotics, and I, you know, clearly I still had an ulcerated mouth. You know, it wasn't as infected, but a that point, at that particular point, it was a lot better because I just started on two courses of antibiotics at the same time. But there was still this, with the inflammation going down, I was really genuinely afraid I was going to choke on a big piece of, or on a piece of flat, broken off, dental cement that already was, like, reaching down to, like, was, like, starting to go down the back of my throat, like this, it was past my jawline. It sits past my jawline. Anyway, so all those gruesome details can be listened to on the Ethical Slot, on maybe not all those, my dental drama. So there's that story. You know, I was presenting as unwell, and yeah. So the other story is something that I'll put up the top of this episode, because I thought I might share it with my nephew if he wants to listen to it, because it's the first time I ever met his mum, my sister, and I just realised in this moment, I guess I can be grateful that I got a bit traumatised, because it's really set that moment in amber, and maybe here's my opportunity to change it from a sad memory into a happy one. I remember the house we lived in. It was such a cool house. It was kind of like a modern sort of L-shaped thing. And our parents had a room up in their own space. And in between there was a really nice kitchen and a long hallway with two bedrooms coming off it, and then a big playroom at the end. Oh, it was great. I love that house. And Mum was away. I didn't really understand. We're 6 years apart, so it was in August. I was going to be turning six next month, when my sister Sarah was born. And I just remember, like, Mum's home. And so my other sister, Shelley, who's 4 years younger than me, says these books, My Naughty Little Sister and Bad Harry. And yeah, my naughty little sister Michelle was my troublesome sister. But now, for the purposes of storytelling and personal growth, I'll say, she was a feisty, cheeky little thing, and she was unstoppable. So, yeah, there's a bit of context first. I'm working on my context skills, people, by the way. It'll make the storytelling better, I think. And my life better. Anyway, so providing context, noticing context, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so remember, it's like the room was bathed in white light. Mum was on the bed and she had Sarah in her arms. And she was looking down at her with this glimmer in her eyes. And Dad was sitting on the bed beside her, looking over, so happy. And Shelley and I came racing in. I was so excited. It's like, and I think maybe my dad said he wants to hold the baby. And I said, I do. And then my naughty little sister Sandra, but I want to hold her first. I think I said, but I said, I wanted to hold her. And then I think it was my mom who, someone who does try to find a non-confrontational solution, and that's certainly how she's raised me, said, you got to hold Shelley when she was a baby for the first time. And so now it's Shelley's turn to be the first. And I thought, well, fuck that bullshit. I don't even like Shelley and I don't remember that experience. I said I want to tell the baby now, but now she's holding the baby. And that just stuck in my, oh, what is it, crawl, whatever. It stuck to me like glue. So Caleb, and I'm not supposed to use your name or anything. I don't think anyone's going to identify you, man. You're welcome, listeners. Look, the ethical slut episode sounds much sexier. You can hear my more dulcet tone version of myself there. And Caleb, if you are listening, don't listen to those episodes. Just the latest one about the hospital. But I don't know. Maybe when you're older. No, I don't really. There's a few that just the most popular one definitely don't. Going back to babies. yeah. It's funny because I don't remember holding Sarah. I just remember seeing her and Mum together and being so jealous. I wanted to hold her so much. She just looked just so tiny and precious, and I was so curious. Spellbound. And then, for Caleb's benefit, after that, your mum, she was just like, you know, she was the baby, and everyone called her Bubba. And she would always suck her fingers and twirl her hair and just be in her own little world. And she'd just, yeah, because in this, these big brown eyes, and she was so cute, CJ. Like, really, really cute. She was really, I mean, you've seen the photos of her. She was a really cute little kid. I mean, she's still beautiful. But, and we all, I just remember so many times going, cuddle, cuddle, Bubba, cuddle. And her just being like, no. Like, everybody always wanted her attention when she was, I just remember that in that house, like, just that feeling of, I just wanted to let, you know, like she, I guess she was probably like, you want to treat me like a doll, fuck off. I don't know. But, okay, so CJ, if this is too much for you, I know you've been exposed to a lot, but, you know, this is personal. I'm your auntie. So maybe wait till you're a bit older to listen to this story. I don't know. You might just, you know, it might be a bit hard for you to hear how rough this was. yeah, as you hear in the other story, I've had some dental work done, and combination of dodgy dentist and my own stupidity ended up with a heap of mouth trauma from getting two crowns done, but my bottom, like on my left side at the back, lost two molars there. So the back one, quite tricky, and yeah, due to unforeseen circumstances, this ended up being just an absolute clusterfuck. and before I'd even had the work done, unbeknownst to me, I had an infection. So when he did his dodgy dental shit, which is like a lot to do with, let's just say, dental cement and leave it at that, both temporary and permanent. Let's just say I have creatively used my fingerprints as like the most delicate of sandpapers, literally polishing off the tiny little sharp edges. But yeah, sticking my fingers in my mouth, not a good move. Found out. It doesn't matter how hygienic you are, how many mouth rinses and how many sprays, if you keep sticking your fingers in your mouth, it's no good. I was just thinking, you know, just about how close that line is. I had the ambulance come out twice. The first time, I wonder where they would have taken me. Because he did mention the mental health unit, the first ambulance guy. He was really nice, but now I'm like suspicious of even that. But at least he could see, or he at least, I don't know, maybe he was just going along with me because he thought I was psychotic, but I really do have a big sheet of dental cement, and with the mouth, the gums heal and like close over and open up really fairly easily, quickly, and so I've literally like felt and broken up, taken, like had pieces like come out of that cement, like I can feel it, like in fact there's still some exposed. Most of it is, like, the gums have grown over it now. She said, like, at the stage when I saw the doctor at the hospital, basically, she said it's just not possible for it to move. Now, I'd spoken to, like, maybe 10 people before then. I don't know, telling them what my symptoms were and stuff. And I was in the specialised, like, was supposed to be in the specialised dental unit, or I don't know what, but if somebody had just told me that it was not physically possible for the thing that I was afraid of happening to happen, I would have just believed them, and that would have been it. But it took until getting to a doctor who, when she said that to me, and I said just, okay, and you see, this is the autism as well, like, and also the infection, and, like, I did tell her I was autistic, and I said, because after she kept telling me about how it's not possible and going on, and I just said, because this has been happening to me a lot, I said, I don't know what it is that I'm doing or what I need to do to get people to hear me when I say that I've heard them and I agree and that I've acquiesced, and people just keep trying to convince me when I've already said yes. And yeah, so I think it might have been at that point or soon after that she said, I need to go speak to my boss. And then soon after, a very tall, actually two nurses came in together. There was a big, tall, stern-looking nurse with two cups, one for water and one for pills. And then another one sort of standing his back up, sort of looking a bit confused. And so, because I'd spoken to her earlier, I think that was her anyway. So she told me, you have to take these pills before the doctor will see you. And in the cup were five pills, two gigantic looking Panadols, which I was like, I'm worried about choking still. Like, I've been... no, I'm still, like, everything's still very sensitive. And then I was like, the Panadol, what's that? What's that? What's that? And it was like, the biggest pills were the Panadol, which were the, like, I just, the ambulance had just given me morphine for my pain. Panadol wasn't going to go do shit. The next was Valium, 2 Valium, which I already had. Like, I'd brought all my own medication, and she said, why didn't you take some of this before you came? And I said, because I didn't know how the drugs would interact with whatever you gave me. So I was waiting, so there was 2 Valium. I mean, she could have said, can you take some of your medication now? You're not very calm. It'll be, you know, you can safely take some of your Valium now. And I would have been like, okay, take the Valium. Okay, I'm not good. But instead she left. She sent the nurses back. The nurse, like, did this whole, like, arms crossed. You got to take these pills. And I'm like, I'm not taking the Panadol. They're too big. She's like, break them in half. And I'm like, no. And then I'm so shaky. I try to, like, put them into my mouth, like, with using the cup, and it's just like, I spill the pills all over myself. Oh yeah, the Endone, the painkiller, the actual painkiller. It was like so small. It was like one of those tiny little homeopathic pills. It was tiny. It was, I've never seen actual medicine so small. I don't know what they expected that Endone to do to me when they saw, like, I'm on, like, trying to think of the size and the size of my, like, 10 times that size a day. I'm on, like, 0.5 of a whatever of Endone a day. It was kind of morphine. Oh, I tell you, like, getting real morphine, I think that was like a reset for all my pain. I don't know, because I felt better. Or maybe it was like the morphine and then going into hospital and getting through the experience. I don't know. But something shifted afterwards for me. That's the good news. But yeah, in hindsight, I realized that I was very, very close to being admitted into the psychiatric ward where, my sister had been, where I'd visited my sister, and the guy in the ambulance, like the first ambulance paramedic that was saying, oh, you know, what about the mental health unit? Like, he made it sound like, you know, they've got a good, you know, these eyes, and I'm just looking at him, remembering the place, the actual place, and just how, no, please no. God no, fuck no, hell no, Jesus. Yeah, so anyway, she was like, you have to take these before I leave, because I was like, okay, because I looked down at the pills, I'm like, okay, thanks. And then she's like, no, you have to take them before I go. And I tried to put them fall out all over myself, pick them up again, and then I throw them into my mouth, and then I put some, or I kept, I'm like, I don't want to, I need to fool this lady, and I'm trying to remember every movie where the people hide. How do you hide taking pills from somebody who's watching you? And I managed to do it a bit, like, put some under my tongue. And then just when she left, I kind of just, like, spat it out into a little medicine bottle that I had in my bag, like, and yeah. And then I was just like, and then I think after the Valium started to kick in, because I had put it under my tongue, so I felt it immediately. And then there was these other two people in the room, who one was injured and one was his mother, and you can listen to all of that drama on the Ethical Slut. But basically, this old lady was quite mean to me. Unnecessarily mean. I was trying to talk to them, yes. I was annoying, yes. But I was also, like, impaired. It's not like, you know, she got angry at someone who was acting because they're sick, like really sick. We're in an emergency ward. Anyway, I want to say to that lady, I said in the episode of The Ethical Slut I was grateful, but I sort of missed a big thing about how I do feel, I feel remorseful, but it's hard because this is a bit of a tangent, but the high of hurting her back when I left, just being cruel with my words, not yelling and abusing, but just, it was more a look, and it was a look of pouring deep yuckiness into my soul, into her eye, and a lot of shoulder back throwing. That's not funny. Anyway, I feel more remorse than what I'm expressing in that episode. If you listen to both, it's just, it was a high. I felt the high stronger, like of saying, yeah, I'm glad. Fuck that bitch. That high. That's probably the biggest high I've felt since I experienced firing a gun in Thailand. I never thought I wanted to fire a gun, but I look like a mad woman after doing it in this photo. I'm like holding this gun, sort of like on my head back, laughing in front of the target. Like, it's just, it was probably even more exhilarating than that. I'm not proud of myself. I'm just saying, like, observing my own body and my reactions, I was amazed. That I committed essentially like a form of, I don't know, it feels like elder abuse because she was like probably my mum's age. My mum's technically an elder. I'd say she, you know, this lady would have been probably like 70 or so. And she wasn't like 90, 80 or 90. She was like 70, 75, I don't know. And fit and, you know, like, I don't know. Anyway, yes, it was bad. It was bad. And I am grateful for her for being mean to me because it just meant, because after the doctor had told me that basically there was nothing that they could do for the problem that I was having. First, she didn't believe me about the thing, but, and I was like, okay, but from what you can see, obviously the skin's, it dawned on me, okay, the skin's grown over enough. She can't see it. So it's not going to slide down. I can still feel it. I can still feel it moving, but it's not going to move enough to choke me. So I'm okay. You know, that was just the logistical thing. I don't want to go to hospital. That's the last thing I ever, 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 ever want to do. So as soon as I know, okay, this thing that I would uniquely need your help for in this situation, I don't need your help for anymore. Okay, good. That's bad, but it's good. I mean, it is what it is. So, but then when I found out she couldn't remove the stuff that was causing the infection and driving me crazy, that's when I started to really, but, and she's like, we don't even have the tools. And I'm like, because seriously, people, I'd been through so much with this. Three dentists, so many things. Anyway, people just turning me away because I don't want to get caught up in some kind of potential litigation with another dentist and, you know. So my main problem I have now, it's just time. So waiting for my gums to grow back up, but I do have a massive ulcer at the back that I think there might be something underneath, so I might need some help with that. I don't know. it's going to really, after I do this podcast, I'm going to just have to not talk until, I might have to put some gaffer tape over my mouth. Yeah, I'll send some messages before I stop talking, because yeah, it's going to start hurting. I'm going to have to take some massive pain meds after this. Should probably get the bird up first, I don't know, or not. Anyway, yeah, so close. I escaped the escape. That's on the ethical slot. But yeah, like I had an infection and people just wouldn't believe me. They wouldn't believe that I was infected. And there's this story I learned recently about, like, the sort of a more of a metaphor, like invisible lions is what I say to myself, as a conceptual keystone, whatever. That, like, if you see someone in the street shouting and yelling and, you know, doing things and clearly distressed and upset, like, you might think, ooh, better get away from them. But if you saw them do exactly the same thing and you saw that there was a lion there, then you would go, oh, shit, I better help that person being chased by a lion. And the difference is that you can't see the other person's lion. And I am paraphrasing that from this dude whose name escapes me, and he wrote a book called, I think it's The Body Keeps the Score. And it's about developmental trauma. Look into it, people. Psychology nerds, developmental trauma. It's a big deal, and it's a real key to unlocking some of your, like, deeper issues, that things like cognitive behavioral therapy will only exacerbate. Not just not help, but actually exacerbate. And there's plenty of studies to prove that, including the one they did on, oh, just fuck it. You know, just believe me. Now I'm on a tangent. My mouth, my talking, my stuff, my invisible lions. My invisible lions. I'm going to just leave it here. I came close to, you know, because the medication that she gave me, like 2 Valium, like they don't give out the tiny, tiny Endone and the 2 Valiums. Like, I don't believe you're in pain, but I do believe that you need to calm the fuck down now. And that doesn't bode well to me. So I am, yeah. I think that when I left that place after that woman was, I claim, abusive to me in a situation where I was really vulnerable, and that's what made it abusive. You know, she was really, like, punching down hard, and I punched down hard back, probably 10 times harder in a way. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure. The body keeps score, not me. Yeah. I think that I prevented myself from being transferred over. Maybe you just need to calm down a bit. You know, how about we take you over to our mental health unit? Oh, God. Thank God I'm not that naive. If they did, you know, like, try to pull that shit on me. Because I know, I've been there. I know my sister stayed there. I do not want to be like my ex-friend's former flatmate hanging from a tree across the road from the psychiatric hospital that just made her pain that incredible amount worse. The same hospital that my mother's mother was sent to for postnatal depression, what we now know is that, and was sentenced to a lifetime of institutionalization. Wollstone Park Hospital, renowned for its horrors. It now is a museum to its own horror. And I think of her hanging deliberately from the tree. The hate that must have fueled her, like, must have been like the kind of rocket fuel I felt for the hate for this woman who hurt me. The exhilaration, I guess. Because actually committing suicide is like, I've never tried. Because I know that it's hard to do. And I know that if I tried to and I wasn't successful, then I would be put in a place that I don't want to go. And that's, for me, that's worse than death. So anything that is short of being 100% certain that I'll die, I won't do. I don't think. If I at least have that much of my brain functioning. But with the scary thing about this infection is that it really cuts that off completely. I left my sister this message. One example is I left my sister this message. CJ. I just thought of someone who might be listening who, if I say this, it might upset them. So, I'm not going to say it. Sorry, guys. Sorry, everyone. But, I left a message on someone's phone that was, I did tell them at the end I hated them, but not, I was having a pity party. I was like, if it weren't for, let's say, you, if it weren't for me caring about you, I would have killed myself in 2014. And that, I really wish I had. And a lot of times people, like, honestly, with some of the, with the things that have happened in the past 9 years, I think I could probably just, I don't know, I mean, we do have a negative brain bias and all that, but I think I could probably just be like, yeah, I think I'll just skip that, because the way I was going to go back then was 10 stories. You know, it was pretty, pretty certain that, but I met someone who'd seen someone fall in front of them, and they said that the sound of the bones is something that she could never get out of her head. And, I don't think I could jump now, because I'm also concerned about how other people will find me and traumatizing others, not just my family, but someone who might find my body and stuff. So, I mean, that's of, depending on how I'm, where I'm at, that's of lesser importance. But what I'm saying is, like, I have been through it with the suicidal ideation and the shifts in my, in all of this stuff. But this infection, the kind of disorientation, it's beyond what I've ever experienced before. People are calling me out all over the place. My own mother, like, when she was here, and I was like, I was losing it. I've been throwing things, I've been screaming, I've been acting like someone who does belong in somewhere that need someone to take care of their mental health needs, but I need someone to take care of my infection. It's just an infection. Yes, I have underlying issues, but I don't need to be controlled. I need to be physically healed with the modern medicine at our disposal. That's all I've needed all along. But what I came close to getting was more pain, more suffering. And at that point, I would have done my own version of hanging from a tree outside that hospital. Or somewhere. But at that point, I would have been wanting to punish the world that hurt me so much. I would have made a big mess on the way out. And I guess it's just something you know when you learn about yourself. I didn't know this about, there's a lot of things I've learned about myself, and I've, you know, and maybe even just me needing to make that distinction. Hey, it's the virus. It's not just my, you know, this thing I'm supposed to be able to control, like my mood and my emotions and my psychological. Oh, hang on. Wait. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm indoctrinated too. We've been taught that unless you can see the lion, unless you can take a picture of it, it doesn't exist. Unless you can attach the right story to the lion. I'm thinking of all of these extensions to this metaphor. You could assume that the lion is running from one direction to, you could use a lion metaphor in causation links. did this cause this? You know, these two things are correlated. Did one cause the other? Which way does the causation go? Was the lion running from left to right or from right to left? Was there a lion running towards the person or away from the person? Did that person actually scare the lion? Should we be helping the lion? Maybe the person that's doing stuff is actually there, the lion. All right. I would be lying if I weren't saying that I need to go. And that I enjoyed this time spending with you. And, happy Easter. I just realized the probable, terribleness, I just realized on an episode of The Ethical Slut, the picture that people will see if they're in Spotify will be of, Jesus on the cross, which is, it's the end of a, it's a family heirloom, these rosary beads, I'm genuinely, it probably sounds like I'm being sarcastic, but I'm genuinely going shout out to the Jesus lovers. I'll put this picture in for you guys. I got nothing against Jesus. I'm not so keen on the Catholic imagery of having this dead, kneeling, naked guy, hanging, but he's got an abs and six pack, and it's both horror and I don't know, it just ugh. I just want to respect people's beliefs and perspectives. I don't give a fuck if it's not, I think that the loss of ethics that we have found ourselves in many other areas in life, I think, prevents us from finger pointing at people who are religious and saying, oh, they're the bad ones that are causing all the trouble. Take a good fucking hard look at yourself, mate, and think about, you know, like, at least these people are looking to follow a set of rules to be better people, even if it's just afraid that they're going to go to hell. Who cares? They are at least, like, making an effort to think about it. Oh, well, maybe they're not. Maybe it's all, like, their status or social pressure or whatever, but I don't know. I think we need to take it a bit easier on the Christians. That's what I reckon. I don't know. I don't live in America where there's a lot of, like, super duper happy clappy bad shit. And maybe I should be a little more critical since our last prime minister, who was not a good guy. He was a part of one of those kinds of churches called Hillsong, a particularly evil one. His whole thing, and how horrible is this, is, oh, you'll know if God loves you if you're financially successful. What? Can you imagine Jesus saying that? I didn't think that's what Jesus was thinking when he was, like, upending the tables, like the lending tables in the fucking, you know, when he did that, he had this huge tantrum. Jesus went, no, you just shouldn't be doing this in here. This is money in a religious place. This is mixing. I don't think Jesus would have liked capitalism, you know? I don't think so. I don't think Jesus was a capitalist. So I think that that argument from Hillsong is really fundamentally flawed. Jesus was not a capitalist. I mean, obviously capitalism wasn't. Anyway, no. That's material success is not a sign of God's love. I mean, fuck. I claim that to be true. I mean, I don't claim to really know anything, but the thought that a divine being would be attached to our material success, it just seems silly to me. It makes me want to giggle. It's so insignificant. Anyway, so yeah, maybe I am crazy. Maybe they should have locked me away, thrown away the key. I don't know. It seems like, at least where I live, the neighbours have taken it seriously that I am not good from what's been happening to me, whatever it is, and that some of the people that have been bullying me really might want to just step the fuck back. Not because they feel sorry for me, but because I'm willing to take steps to take care of myself, and there are people watching me. So, and listening to me, like you. Hello. Now I'm going to really think about you. I'm going to imagine you. Like, first I'm going to imagine those 19 Spotify users and go, oh, hello, are you any of the people I already know from Anchor? Like, it's an interesting transition, right? Like, and then there's some people who, like, are from Anchor Days. There's this one guy who's got this low voice, and he calls in and he says, I remember his voice, and I can't remember his name. And he has called in and said, like, hey, I'm here, I am listening. And he's so cool, and I think he's big into Jesus, I think, or something. He's big into something, I can't remember, but people who are a bit too big into some things that are not things that I'm really big into, I can be like, that's what I was thinking before. Is neurodivergent accidental arselry. Oh, I'm sorry, you had a feeling? Oh, I'm sorry, I had a thought. You had a feeling? Oh, I had a thought. And like, that is how it is. Like, you're caught up in your own mind that you just don't notice context, including other people's feelings or how other people might feel about your behaviour. I mean, we all do that to some extent, but I think it's the issue of context. And that this is a big thing. Maybe, you know, I'm thinking maybe I'm hitting the reset button on my podcasting. I definitely need a creative outlet. Oh, man, my mouth is sore. What is it? Ugh. Yeah, I've been talking for 50 minutes, so... Oh, boy. So that was the day I nearly got into a psych ward because I didn't realize that people working in paramedics and hospitals had feelings because I was too busy thinking about choking on dental cement and surviving being in a hospital. Yeah. And if this, yeah, you know, if this whole hospital story has interested you, then, yeah, check out the ethical slot because there's a lot more blood on the platform. That's all I'm going to say. But maybe that'll be too much. Blood from a cannula I pulled out after escaping the hospital. There we go. All right. Lulu Island listeners. That was for the benefit. Or not for the benefit of my neighbour, because I don't want the one that I think is... Well, he's not my neighbour, he's my neighbour's... whatever. That's another story. That's the reason I haven't been... I mean, I've had so much going on, but when there's so much going on, it's funny. It's like, that's the best time to produce content, but it's the hardest time, so... But I'm inspired by one of my heroes, Jen Kirkman, to just keep doing it. Like, it can't be, you know, like, perfection is the enemy of good. So, you know, here I am. Now my fridge is buzzing. I'm still sniffly. I thought that would clear up. But, I've enjoyed spending some time with you guys, my imagined fans, my imagined listeners. Yeah. Oh, at the very least, I'm imagining Jessica will probably listen to this, even though I'm shocking at listening to her podcast. Oh, here's a shout out to Jessica. Art is life. For those of you who like me and what I'm doing, you'll love Jessica. She is a truly beautiful person. She's been through some shit. I mean, if you've, oh my God. If you've ever had to deal with homelessness or you're wanting to know what it would be like being a family with two blind parents and a child trying to get somewhere to live, I mean, they did get support, but more through the church than the state. Once again, that's what it sounded like to me. Or the church was like that bridging between the person and the state, which has been my problem here. And even with state intervention, like, deliberately, you know, I've been getting extra support for that maybe a church would normally offer, but I think a church does it better. Maybe. But yeah, she's really been through it, and I'm not anti-state, I'm not super Christian, I'm just like, these are my experiences, okay? I don't know shit. The more you know, the more you don't know. So I must be fucking smart because I don't know anything. Once again, I've forgotten where I am. I am leaving. But I'm just enjoying having an audience, whoever you are. And I hope that you've enjoyed spending some time with me. You know, maybe you've learned some stuff. I don't know. Maybe you're hearing me in your dreams. And so if you're asleep and my podcast is sending you to sleep, then I'll lower my voice gently as they roll out like the tide and say goodnight. Sleep well.